Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I'm Matt.
And today we're discussing how COVID's hard knocks have exposed our money deficiencies.
You know what I like about the fact that we use the word deficiencies in the title of this episode? Is it makes me think of nutrition, right? And when we are deficient in something, it means we're not healthy.
Yeah, right? Vitamin deficient,
I've
right?
Got a, yeah, there's a bone deficiency. My bones aren't getting something that they need.
Probably the calcium.
That's calcium and vitamin D. Right?
Okay, all right.
I think you need the vitamin D in order. That's why they add vitamin D to milk. Did you know that?
No.
I think you need that vitamin in order for your body to absorb the calcium.
There we go.
The more you know. But this also makes me think of this Warren Buffett quote where he talks about how when the tide goes out, you get to see who's swimming naked. And this isn't a weird, like, perverted joke on behalf of Mr. Buffett. But he's talking about investing in those who are over-leveraged and those who are doing riskier, speculative buys, right? And so I think the same can be true when it comes to our money. There are a lot of behaviors that we can engage in and we can kind of be living on the edge when it comes to our personal finances. And I think for a lot of Americans, COVID has exposed some of those deficiencies, some of those shortcomings as it pertains to our money. So I'm excited to talk about that with you today, man.
Yeah, COVID has definitely revealed some things. COVID has revealed a lot in our personal lives, right? In our marriage, maybe, let's say, in our family structure, family dynamics. COVID has done a number on us as a whole. And today we're going to kind of take a look and see, you know, what lessons we can learn, what COVID has revealed about our personal finances. Matt, before we get to that real quick, I wanted to mention, I stumbled upon this website, babyquip.com. Have you heard of it?
Is it a website that sells baby Q-tips?
I wish. That'd be adorable. But no, this one was specifically a website where you can rent your baby stuff out to other people. And let's say you're traveling with Ooh. An infant and you can't take the crib and the stroller and all that kind of stuff, or it's just like too tough, too difficult to bring all that stuff along with you. You can.
Understandably so. I remember seeing people traveling, like, you know, in the airport, and they've got like the car seat, and I'm just like, oh, that looks miserable.
Right.
Like, I do not. Like, yeah, I'm not going to sign up for that. You know, like, there's no way that I am willing to travel with my kids, at least not at this age.
So instead, you can go to babyquip.com and you can rent your stuff from a local individual where you're traveling to. I thought it was cool that, one, that you can do that, right? Like, you can be, let's say you go down to Florida for a week for vacation. You don't want to pack all that baby stuff. You can rent stuff locally from someone who lives there. Also, too, if you have extra baby stuff, this is a way in which you could make money. You could have like a little side hustle going on, right? Ooh. It's kind of like Turo for your car. This is like Turo for your baby stuff.
You'd be like, all right, Westy, somebody needs the crib tonight. You're sleeping on the couch.
Exactly.
This makes me think too. I mean, you and I were both on our last babies, basically. At least, you know, we're not planning on having any more kids. You and Emily are done for sure. Kate and I, we're on the way to being completely done with babies for sure. But it makes me wonder, what is the number one piece of equipment? You know, this is a baby equipment kind of website. Is there something that you feel like over the years has paid dividends, you know, when it comes to being able to raise the kids? The first thing that comes to my mind is the that white IKEA high chair that is, I mean, it's ubiquitous. You know, it's the one that you see everywhere. It's like $20. We've used that for all four of our kids.
Yeah, high chair is clutch and can make it through. For us, I think it was probably a jogging stroller that was gifted to us. I think it was like Ooh. A $75 jogging stroller, but we've used it for all three kids. And it's stood the test of time. And it's just like, it works, it functions, and it's great. It's nothing like, it's not one of those fancy ones, but that's not what we needed. You know, we're not like fancy joggers running marathons or anything like that. So it's just like perfect for strolling around the neighborhood and getting over all the, you know, we got some crummy sidewalks in our neighborhood, all these like tree roots growing up underneath it. So you actually need a stroller with like solid wheels, like with good jogging stroller wheels. And I think that's probably been like the number one piece of baby equipment that we've like used all the time.
Yeah. And you've used that for the girls. You've used that for your new son as well. This actually makes me think of as well over the years for the kids' rooms, we've used a Nest Cam, but they now require a subscription that you pay every single month if you want to be able to see what happened, you know, and we like to see what happened because there are a lot of fights that happen and not everyone always tells the truth. But you recently turned us on to this company called Wyze, W-Y-Z-E. And I saw recently that they came out with a new camera, V3. But what's so great about these cameras is the fact that you can stick a little micro SD card in there and it'll record footage locally on that camera in HD. And so that's nice. But then, of course, you get to completely eliminate that recurring charge. And so that's a huge frugal win, man. And the camera's really cheap, too. Like, some of those Nest cameras are, like, upwards. I don't even know what they cost now, like some of the nice ones. But, they're definitely over $100. And this new V3 Wyze Cam, $25.
Pretty sweet, man.
It's a huge deal.
And they've got a new security system I saw, too, that I think it's $70 a year. And that includes actual monitoring.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, we should put a link to that in the show notes. But it's one of those things where that's something that has drastically come down in price is home security, you know, system monitoring. I remember when I remember when Simply Safe launched, it was $15 a month for monitoring. And it was like, oh, my gosh, how did they do that?
Right.
And now there's people doing it for, you know, like $6 a month.
Pennies on the dollar.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, let's mention the beer that we're having on the show today. This one is Abraxas. It's by Perennial Artisan Ales. And this is a giant stout. So looking forward to sharing this one with you, my friend, on the show today. But onto the subject at hand, we're talking about how COVID's hard knocks have exposed our money deficiencies. And, you know, because we're essentially a year in from COVID being named a pandemic by the World Health Organization, well, let's take a look back and see kind of what's changed in the past year, because this event has changed everything about how we live, and really in short order when you think about it. Mask wearing or double masking, virtual schooling, potting with your best friends, all of those have had an impact. And I don't even think we fully understand all the ways in which COVID has like ravaged and impacted our lives.
That's true.
It's also highlighted some of the heroism of like frontline healthcare and grocery store workers. It's changed like how we shop and what we're buying. It's realigned priorities for us personally and in our financial lives. And as vaccinations are ramping up, which is good news, and we kind of start to turn this corner, you know, Matt, you and I don't want to forget these important lessons that I think are worth carrying forward. And that's why we wanted to highlight the important shifts and lessons that we've learned from COVID and some of those glaring money deficiencies that have been brought acutely to our attention.
Yeah, I think, I mean, down the road, when we look back at 2020, it's going to be one of those years, it's going to be one of those events where in the moment right now, I don't think we fully understand the impact that it's going to have on our lives. You know, it kind of makes me think back when 9/11 happened. Like, we didn't truly understand the impact that would have on our country. And so you're mentioning kind of, yeah, all the different ways that it's affecting our lives. But here on the show, of course, you know, we dive into personal finance. And so the big question that we're wondering is, has COVID changed how we handle our money? You know, we're wondering what kind of impact the pandemic has had on our ability to earn, spend, save, and invest, and what happened in the past 12 months that can inform our ability to be financially successful in the future. You know, that's what we're going to be discussing today, how it is that we can continue to apply the financial lessons that we've learned from lockdowns and the pandemic as we are looking to move forward.
Yeah, and though we're tackling some universal lessons on this episode, there were also some lessons that were a bit of an outlier, but I think, you know, maybe a couple of them are worth covering. Let's talk about kind of how the pandemic has impacted our ability to earn money, or how we think about earning money. Direct stimulus payments were one of those things that were unexpected going into 2020. I think if you told me in January, guess what? The government is going to send, you know,
thousands of dollars out to every single family.
To millions, tens of millions of people. I would have been like, yeah, probably not. That's not going to happen. But those payments were necessary to help folks who lost their job or furloughed, and to also kind of thrust money directly into a struggling economy to kind of help facilitate some of that spending that really does make our economy go. And one of the lessons that we learned, I think, over the past 12 months is that the federal government has the ability to do some pretty extraordinary things in times of severe need. Other actions that we saw because of the pandemic were PPP loans for small businesses, increased unemployment compensation, and the Federal Reserve buying assets to keep financial markets functioning. One lesson I know that I learned, although it's maybe a little less practical, is that the government has a lot of power to take some real initiative when our economy starts to sputter. And they definitely stepped in and did something big time, you know, over the past year.
Right. But that also raises the question, too, how important of a lesson is this one for us to internalize and to remember? Because ultimately, like, we feel it's not as important as many of the others that we're going to talk about today, because of the impact we have as individuals on government action is pretty limited. It was nice to see the government quickly rush in and provide aid with the CARES Act, but we've also seen a lot of dysfunction in government since then. And so, you know, hoping that future difficulties will sort of release a knight in shining armor isn't something I'm going to count on. And so let's move on to some of the things that are going to be more within your control.
Well, I feel like if you'd run for president, that would help.
Are you calling me a knight in shining armor?
Yes. I feel like, dude, come on. President Matt.
I'd joust you. But I don't think I'd make a good president.
Okay. All right. I think another something that we learned that's actually more applicable to how we move forward is about industry shifts. They're always taking place. They always have been, and they always will be. But oftentimes, industry shifts happen slowly, and we fail to kind of recognize and realize what's happening before our very eyes because it's not happening as quickly as it has during COVID. COVID, of course, accelerated many of the shifts that were already taking place. Some sectors are still barely alive and haven't really begun their recovery. Although travel has seen an uptick, travel is still a sector that is severely hurt because mm-hmm. of the pandemic. I think one of the takeaway lessons is that no specific job or industry is bulletproof, although some are maybe a little more Teflon-like than others.
They can kind of deflect the blows,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that COVID has created some real incentives for people to think a little more about the future potential of the industry that they work in, and maybe whether or not they should be looking to shift and take the skills that they have and maybe apply them in a completely different sector altogether. And Matt, my day job still last year when the pandemic was kind of roiling and getting started was working in radio, and something happened that people were calling the adpocalypse during those months. Radio advertising fell off a cliff and it proceeded to come back in large part. But I do think that those months have accelerated the downturn of radio. Radio stations are hurting more than ever before, and we're going to kind of continue to see it as a medium in decline. It's one of those things, like, I got into radio at a pretty bad time 15 years ago, and getting into radio today is like an even worse decision. So it's just kind of interesting to see how that happens and how something like COVID can accelerate the demise of something that was kind of already headed in that direction.
Does it feel weird for you to say like that I was in radio, past tense, you know? Because you recently shared on the show like a few weeks ago how you're now officially full-time with the podcast, you know, like we both are. But it's still kind of weird to say though, right?
It is. But it's also, yeah, when you think about making a shift, making a shift out of an industry that is in decline is a whole lot easier to do than to make a shift away from an industry that's having a stellar time, you know?
Right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So, I mean, for me personally, with wedding photography, I mean, like, I feel like my personal income shift started about like 4 years ago. We started thinking through that, like, you know what? I don't want to necessarily have my weekends full of other engagements. You know, like, time with the kids was becoming a little more precious as they were kind of launching into full-time school. And so that was kind of something we started thinking about back then. It kind of, not coincidentally, that's also when we started batting around the idea of the podcast. But even before then, man, like back in 2013 is when you and I both started getting into rental real estate. And dude, that was so clutch for me to be able to have some multiple streams of income, right? Because if I was purely dependent on a single source, specifically wedding photography, I would have been in a world of hurt last year. Yeah. I mean, the industry ground to a halt. And granted, there's not like a major shift that took place or that is taking place. But I mean, basically everything was just put on hiatus. So that kind of leads us to our next point, which is that COVID has just amplified the need, you know, to be working towards having multiple streams of income. You know, if you're married or in a long-term relationship, having two paychecks, that's just, you know, one great way of doing this. But, you know, even looking beyond just paychecks that you get from a single employer, you know, a way to create more fiscal resiliency is going to be by finding other ways to generate cash flow every single month. We talk here on the show how it's important to start with your day job and then look to ways that you can easily maximize your earning potential there first. But, you know, there is inherent risk involved when the vast majority of your income does come from a single source.
Yeah, for sure. And that was something that a lot of people recognized specifically during COVID. It's definitely an argument, I think, too, for firing up some entrepreneurial spirit. Maybe it's in you somewhere and it's kind of been laying dormant, or maybe it did kind of come out of you during the pandemic. And for some, that means looking to monetize your passion. COVID forced some people to turn a hobby into a career, as their traditional career, the job where they were working, essentially didn't have room for them anymore. They couldn't get a paycheck there. And that's been kind of interesting to see some of the people that have had success by striking it on their own when they didn't really have many other great options. You know, Matt, you mentioned we're big fans of rental real estate. To diversify your income, that takes time and also capital, right? So it's not easy. But COVID made it apparent that multiple streams of income is incredibly nice to have. And although it's going to take planning and some time to get there, it's definitely worth pursuing.
Yeah, man. And the statistics support this as well. There are nearly 80% more new business applications that were filed last year compared to 10 years ago, back in 2010. So that's encouraging. Folks are making that change. People are pivoting and finding ways to diversify their income.
Yeah, it's good to see that people are pivoting based on the circumstances. And that is certainly an important lesson that we've learned from COVID. You got to be able to pivot quickly. And lessons that we can learn from the deficiencies that we can easily see. We'll get to some more of those right after this break.
All right, we are back. And, you know, Joel, basically we were talking about in that first section there some of the hard knocks that we took due to COVID and how that affected our ability to earn money. And so next, let's look at some of the other areas that have been impacted by COVID. You know, we've certainly seen spending trends change since COVID started. Back in April, the largest drop in consumer spending ever recorded occurred. Since then, though, you know, we've seen online shopping. It was already a mainstay, but now folks of all ages are getting more comfortable shopping online. Credit card debt levels went down actually last year. And, you know, while that's not what you would expect in the middle of a, you know, rampant job loss and dire economic predictions, it certainly goes to show how much flexibility we have with our money. And two, just how often the lack of positive movement, it's more about our lack of implementation, not a lack of income or not a lack of knowing what to do with our money. It's actually our behavior where we need to make those changes.
Yeah, that's true. And one of the areas that people spend a good bit of money is travel. We saw travel spending.
Or traditionally
people,
people spend money on travel.
We saw a deep dive, right, in travel spending, obviously much to the chagrin of hotels, airlines, all sorts of different companies impacted by the inability to travel or the unwillingness as well to travel. And I think there are a couple things that we learned through this disruption on how we should think about spending money when it comes to travel. One of the lessons that we've learned, one of the things that the pandemic exposed, was that we have to be careful when booking travel through third-party sites. Booking a trip through an online travel agent or third-party discount site can bring down the cost of your trip, but there are other risks involved when you don't book directly with an airline or a hotel. And it's important to know the trade-offs. I mean, Matt, I'm still all about booking a hotel at Priceline in order to save money, but you might not get the same customer service or the same cancellation benefits when you book a hotel there as opposed to going directly through the hotel itself. Lots of people found less helpful customer service and that refunds were hard to come by when they booked at some of those third-party travel sites. And especially, like, let's say you book through an independent travel insurance company or individual who runs their own travel insurance agency. Sometimes they didn't have the ability to give those refunds. And so how you book travel matters, and it's important to know the fine print when you are booking travel in the future.
Yeah, that's right. And on that note too, travel insurance is more worthwhile than most people thought. That's something that we've learned recently. And you can purchase a policy on sites like Insure My Trip that will provide real actual help in case your trip is canceled. And so just make sure to read the fine print of your specific policy. But COVID really drew a big red circle around the importance of travel insurance, whereas in the past, I think it's something that we would have been like, no, that's something that you could absorb, just absorb the cost of that. But now we're realizing it's definitely something worth considering.
Yeah, and where you book matters too, right? Like when we're talking about the airlines, they all had different responses in the pandemic. We talked to Scott Kies about this, you know, early on, and some airlines were happy to change your plans or to give you a refund, whereas some airlines were trying to stick you with a credit as opposed to giving you cash back in your hands. Same with some of the cruise lines. Part of my takeaway from all that was like, man, I'm so glad that I fly Southwest most of the time because they pretty much always make it easy to change your plans. And that's a big perk.
Yeah, that's something that we've learned specifically when it comes to travel, especially travel by airline or by cruise. But, you know, as it pertains to just how we spend our money in general, with more folks working from home, commuting has become less of a thing. And this meant that a lot of folks were shaving quite a bit of ill-spent time out of their days, and they were saving that money as well. Insurers were offering partial refunds on auto policies. We were spending less money on gas. And some folks, Joel, like you, were ditching a car altogether. COVID just, you know, revealed how businesses and how workers alike continued to do things the same way that they had always been done, just despite the potential benefits, you know, of shaking things up and allowing working from home in greater numbers. In this instance, COVID is a reminder that it shouldn't take a pandemic in order for us to make smart shifts in how we live our lives. And we should question the things that we do every single day. You know, we should at least ask the question of our employer, is this something that is an option? You know, know, can I work from home? Like, what are the options here? You know, transportation costs are huge. And so if there's a way that we can, you know, reduce some of those costs, we're going to be for that every single day.
Yeah. Is this immutable? Is this like fixed, unchangeable? And those are good questions to ask because, yeah, now a lot more things are changeable and businesses are reacting to what their workforce expects. They have a new expectation about how they can work, where they can work, and the hours of the day in which they work too. And Matt, I think this like speaks to a greater overall shift essentially that's occurred in so many ways that we spend. You know, our family, we're not going out to restaurants like we used to.
We're definitely
ordering more pizza. I saw a story recently.
Also true.
Yeah, pizza sales are like through the roof.
Oh, and I bet.
It was like, pizza is like the perfect pandemic food.
They already had the delivery thing down. They were already used to people coming by and just picking up a couple of pizzas on Fridays, which is what you and our families tend to do every other Friday.
We get
everybody together and we have a pizza party, get the kids together. It's a lot of fun.
It's one of those shifts that was easy to make, right?
Yeah.
And we've also seen that a lot of expenses in our lives are less rigid than we previously thought. I feel like this is the perfect time for our listeners, for all of us, to remake our budget and consider cutting expenses in our lives. For instance, you just mentioned our family. We ditched a car, which lowered our insurance costs, which lowered our taxes every year on that car.
It's another set of tires you don't have to buy every 50 to 75,000 miles or whatever.
Exactly. That's, it's lowering our electricity bill by, like, I don't know, probably like 12 bucks a month. So not that much. But.
Well, yeah, you had the electric car.
Yeah.
I'm a little bitter. I just recently had to replace some tires on the van. So I'm still feeling that burn a little bit.
It's expensive. but those are the kind of things I think that we can really start to rethink and remake our budget, because when something's imposed on us, I think it was former President Obama's chief of staff, Rahm Emanuel, who said, never let a good crisis go to waste. And I think there's like some wisdom there too, not to exploit something, but in essence, to be able to use it for our own benefit, to use it for our own good. And for all of us, you know, I think it shows we have more control over our life, our work, and our finances than maybe we previously thought. Drastic changes that have been imposed on us reveal the truth that we easily forget, that we actually do have some of that control. We can make changes in our personal lives and in our finances so that our lives look a little more like we want them to look and less like they're being constantly shaped by the forces around us. More like they're being shaped from our own hopes and desires.
Yeah, shaped from within.
Yeah.
That's what we would encourage our listeners to do. You know, ask yourself, you know, what shifts have you made that you can actually keep around? And, you know, maybe that's eating in more often. Maybe it's buying fewer clothes since you don't have to go into the office. You feel a little less pressure to have the newest threads. Maybe it's exercising at home. Joel, that's something you and Emily have been doing, right?
True.
These are all major things that have changed for a number of folks. And so just think about the shifts that you've already made that can stick around after you're vaccinated, after, you know, COVID's no longer a part of our zeitgeist. But also, too, think about the shifts that you can still consider implementing. Maybe these are changes that you've kind of stumbled upon, but if you actually step back from it, you're like, oh, wow, we're saving $200 a month because we're not doing X. Like, whatever that is in your life, just the ability that we have to cut back on spending is just incredible. And that's one of the most immediate ways that we can have a huge impact when it comes to our personal finances.
I think the number one way that COVID has impacted our family is that it's just reduced a huge amount of things that were on the calendar. They were just kind of taken off the calendar indefinitely. And I'm going to be way more thoughtful about the things I put on the calendar in the future.
Yeah.
It's easy to let these things pop on, then they never come off. Different activities we're involved in, different neighborhood things that we want to be a part of, some of which we are excited to get back to, and others of which I am glad for the lull, and I'm not planning on getting back to them. And so I think it's probably similar with the budget for a lot of people. It's like, man, I really do miss going to eat out. But you know what? It didn't have to be a $300 line item in my budget. It can be $150 line item in my budget. And that's another way in which I can save moving forward. I wouldn't have done that otherwise, but the pandemic has revealed this deficiency that I was leaning on eating out as a crutch. And you know what? Eating in hasn't been all that bad.
That's right.
But let's move on and talk about saving. And Matt, there's still 10 million Americans that are unemployed. And that's a hard statistic to see. And I think that reflects the truth that there's never been a better time for people to have a fully funded emergency fund. The economy essentially had been booming for 10 years straight. Unemployment wasn't as big of a concern for most people. And COVID just really drove home the point that the job that you have, you're not promised to have that tomorrow. And so you do need to have your financial act together in order to weather a potential jobless period in your life. And I think this just totally reflects the fact that people need an emergency fund to weather that storm. It really drives that point home in a big, big way.
Right. And so if you're newer to the show, you know, this simply just means having cash savings in the bank. that you can draw on for any unexpected emergencies that arise. You know, like, this isn't money that's invested. It's just sitting there waiting on those storm clouds to come rolling in. And as far as how much you should have set aside, we've talked about this before, but we feel that there are two levels of a funded emergency fund. First, it means having $2,467 set aside. This is a basic amount that should be your top financial priority. And that's actually money gear number one. We go into depth and detail as to why we chose that dollar amount. You can go and listen back to that episode. We will put it in our show notes. But after that, after you're getting an employer match and paying off high interest rate debt, that's when you want to have that fully loaded emergency fund. That's when you're going to want to have 3 to 6 months worth of living expenses set aside.
Yeah. And I think one of the deficiencies that COVID revealed was that most of us can save more than we thought we could.
Oh, yeah.
And that bore out in the numbers and how people responded during the height of the crisis, right?
Yeah, since the start of the pandemic, the assets that Americans had in the bank shot up from $700 billion. It doubled to $1.4 trillion.
Yeah, and we saw credit card debt on the decline. Like, people were paying off credit card debt in the middle of lots of unemployment and financial uncertainty.
Yeah.
People really used that time to save more, like you said, and then to pay off debt. And it's fascinating, though, how in normal times, we say that we can't do it. But then the crisis hits and we find a way. And we saw the same thing happen back in 07 and 08. People paid off their debt and increased their savings, even while the economy was experiencing just a massive amount of turmoil. The same is true in COVID times. And it's not, I don't think, that saving money is easy. It's always easier to spend than it is to save, but it takes intentionality in order to save money well. But excuses are often a major factor that keeps us from ramping up our savings. It's not necessarily that we can't prioritize saving more. It's just that we don't. And I think that is definitely one of the biggest lessons we can learn from COVID. One of the biggest deficiencies that it shows us is our inability to prioritize that. And this crisis forced us to change what we did on a dime. And I hope that most of us can kind of stick with that change, that prioritization of paying off high interest rate debt and saving more of our income. That provides a huge mental boost to how you feel about your money, while at the same time just providing a bunch more financial security too.
That's right. And so that is how COVID has shown some of the deficiencies when it comes to our money in some of these areas. We're going to talk about one more area where a deficiency was revealed due to COVID. And we're going to get to that one right after this break.
Keep talking about this. Let's talk about COVID and how it's impacted our finances. Obviously, it's had a major impact in all facets of our life. Some things we're ready to get back to normal, right? I think most of us are ready to go back with our family to eat at a restaurant and not feel weird about it. That'll be nice.
That's true.
I think we're ready to see our neighbors, you know, their faces and not just their masked versions. There are so many things I am ready to get back to normal. But then there are other things, like we've talked about, where I want to learn a lesson from it and I want to change and I want to pivot moving forward. And I think, you know, the same is true with our personal finances. There are some lessons that we've learned that we need to take forward and not just forget.
And the same is true, too, when it comes to our investing, right? Like, how it is that we invest our money. And the fact is, like, COVID hasn't really changed our approach to investing. You know, it hasn't changed it all that much, although there are some important, albeit subtle, lessons from the past year that are really important to point out. And the first is the fact that corrections happen. Most folks, especially younger millennials, maybe who had only the foggiest recollection of what happened back in 2007, 2008, began to think that the stock market maybe only goes up. And the truth is that when you look at a chart of the overall market for the past 50 years, you'll see that it does mostly go up. You know, like, that's mostly true. But human behavior always enters the equation, and quite a few downturns and recessions should be expected in the lifetime of any investor. You know, the stock market is not a long-term savings account that just allows for far higher returns without any risk, without any of those dips.
Yeah, and we saw the risk full on, in full force in March, right? And a lot of people panicking. We, you know, in retrospect now, when we look back, we're like, man, that dip was extreme, but it was short-lived. But we didn't know that that was going to be the case at the time. A lot of people were continuing to predict that the stock market would fall further. And, you know, I'll be honest, I thought that the downturn it would last a little bit longer than it did. I did not think it was going to last 3 weeks, you know. But I think a really important question to ask yourself based on that is, how did you respond during the stock market free fall that happened in March? This is one of the most helpful questions that you can ask yourself. If you made changes to your portfolio when the stock market was tanking, then maybe you weren't invested properly in the first place. Last year, we all got the chance to not just assume what we think we would do given a steep market decline, but to see how we actually handled it in real life. And that's really informative moving forward, right? Like if you did make some changes, if you sold some stuff, if you moved your assets into cash when the stock market was having a tough go, then your investment plan in general needs to change, right?
That's right. And that's also too why it's so important to know like your specific timeline and to have a written investment plan. The importance of a personal plan was magnified during the early months of COVID for sure. You know, the plan that you can stick to is going to be way better than a plan that keeps you up at night, that causes you a lot of stress. Joel and I mean, you and I, we're both 100% invested in stocks, and we are totally okay with that since, you know, we're in the wealth building phase of our lives. But make sure that your portfolio is something that you can stick with through the good and the tough times.
Yeah. So let's put it in perspective too, Matt. If somebody made a change during that time, because they were like, this is it. This is not good. This is going to be an extended downturn.
And started freaking out,
yeah,
right?
I can't handle it. Well, if you had made changes instead of staying invested because the markets were tanking and you happened to sell at the exact wrong moment, you would have missed out on about a 75% increase that we've seen in the market since then. That's on the S&P 500, not some fancy tech stock or Bitcoin or anything like that, right?
That's not on Tesla. That's on the S&P 500, which is, yeah, you know, one of the more conservative indexes out there. That's unbelievable. And to think that somebody who pulled out at the wrong time, they would have missed out on all of that. It's good to remember that the market will bounce back. You know, when you look at the past 50 years at the rolling 15-year periods, there's not one single 15-year period where you're not going to average a positive return. And so it's good to remind ourselves of that, especially when things aren't looking so great.
So yeah, I think so. One of the deficiencies that we've found out in COVID times when it comes to our investing is maybe that we're paying a little too much attention to the markets, to where our investments stand on a day-to-day basis. Maybe we should actually take a step back, develop that investment plan, make changes rarely to our investment plans, and plan those changes out in advance. If emotions are making the rules instead of your investment plan, then that is something that needs to change. That's a lesson you need to learn from what's happened in the past year.
That's true. Like, you would have been better off riding your bike and then having gotten hit by a car, getting knocked into a coma for 3 months, and then having woken up and be like, wait, what's going on? What happened to the markets? Like, you would have been in a better position.
Depends on how
expensive. Financially, yeah, speaking.
Well, it depends on how big the hospital bill was.
That's true. assuming you have insurance. I'm not trying to make light of if you've ever gotten hit by a car.
Which I have.
Which you have, yeah. So I'm teasing you a little bit.
So I'm trying to think of it, if it was worth it or not. What? I don't know. It's not fun to get hit by a car.
Yeah. But it's important, though. I mean, we're talking about investing, and it's important to stick with a plan, stick with a decision, and stick with whatever is going to work for you and not have your actions swayed by your emotions.
And if you didn't get hurt too badly, like I didn't, I had like a little shoulder mess up, but it can be a good story to tell at cocktail parties and stuff, you know?
So you talking about the pain, actually, I heard your daughter, the girls were over at our house for lunch today, and I went up there for lunch and I heard your daughter tell a joke, and she goes, why did the window go to the doctor? And my girls were like, why? And she's like, because it had window pane. Which I thought was a perfect dad joke. Was, well, that one that you told her?
No, she didn't
really
get that one from me, I'm going to steal that one from her.
I mean, I literally laughed out loud. I was like, oh, that one's really good.
It's pretty good. Especially coming from a 7-year-old. Not as cute from a 37-year-old.
Still good. But, you know, man, like, I feel like what we're pointing out here is the fact that we have control over our lives, you know? Like, we say that there are financial goals that we can't attain, but when the, you know, when the crap hits the fan, we actually are able to make dramatic changes to our personal finance habits. The pandemic has made that abundantly clear. Back when we were kind of coasting along in our pre-COVID lives, I know there were many areas where I certainly probably lacked some initiative. Maybe there were, you know, maybe some moderate financial goals that we had set for ourselves, but like Kate and I weren't fully committed, you know? And so for many of us, it unfortunately took something as dramatic and jarring as the pandemic to kind of snap us out of our milquetoast ways.
Yeah, man, this whole episode too, it makes me think about some of the emails we've received in recent months from listeners, right? And they have been taking action for years now based on what they've been hearing on the podcast. And a lot of them weren't completely unscathed by COVID. Some of them did lose a job or their partner lost a job. But they were able to get through this time with far less anxiety and hardship because of the steady moves that they made in recent years while they've been listening to the show. They were prepared even for something that you can't prepare for, right? Mm. And I think it's our hope, too, that some of the money changes that we've already made due to COVID stick around, that some of our listeners have been able to implement in their lives, that those will have a stickiness because of maybe the traumatic effect that COVID has had on all of us. Maybe you were listening and you made some of those changes out of necessity, like you had to cut back, but you've also found that you've been able to boost your ability to save, and that has provided real financial security. Despite the difficulty, the changes you've made are worth keeping for good. Let's make it a point to actually learn from the past year, not to just have let it happen to us and then immediately revert back to the way things were. If we can take a look at those deficiencies head on and we can learn from them, take the lessons that they have to show us, we'll be more resilient when future events, hopefully non-pandemic in nature, arise.
Yeah. What's interesting about the pandemic, man, is the fact that like the reason it was so traumatic for all of us was because we all experienced it at the same time. But like you said, like there are going to be events that arise and that come up in our lives that other people aren't experiencing, right? Like we're all going to have sort of our own personal pandemics. And that's why it is so important for us to be prepared, for us to have learned from this past year. And that's a part of, I mean, that's why we love personal finance so much, right? Like you have agency over your own life. You have control. There are changes that you can make on an individual level. And that truly is why we love personal finance so much, is that these are changes that you can begin making in your life right now. I love that.
Yeah, a lot of changes based on what we discussed today, right? That people can have already implemented. And if they haven't learned from some of these lessons, maybe mull them over again in your mind and give some thought to how you can change.
Yeah. Think again.
it is worth truly giving it a little more thought. Again, I think sometimes we react to a stimulus and we don't really realize, why did we react that way? Was that the right way to react? And it's a good time to do some thinking about how our lives are structured right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Well, Matt, let's get back to the beer real quick that we had on the show. This one is called Abraxas. It's a giant stout with chili pepper, vanilla, cocoa nibs, something else in there.
Cinnamon in there as well.
Yes.
I bet, did you pick up on some of those notes?
I feel like the cinnamon was the biggest
thoughts?
Note. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that I was getting. The cinnamon shined through. The chili peppers, not so much. Like
not a whole lot of heat.
Yeah. I was expecting a little more, hoping for a little more, because I love beers that have that kind of chili pepper kick.
A little bit of spice.
Yeah. But that's okay, because this was a super delicious dessert beer. Even though I would have loved the chili peppers to be stepped up a little bit, this was smooth, it was rich, it was delicate. It was definitely like a beer that you would have truly like with your dessert or instead of dessert. It's really, really good.
Very true. So have you ever had horchata like out in public?
No, I haven't.
The reason I say
my wife has made some at the house and it's not bad.
So weird. Maybe our wives were doing the same thing, or maybe they shared a recipe or something like that. I have had it at home, but I'm not totally sure how legit it was. Like, I want to go somewhere where there's somebody's grandma who's been making horchata, you know, for decades. Like, that's the kind of horchata I want to try one of these days. But I feel like this reminded me of that. Like, I saw in the bottle it said that it has lactose in it. And I feel like you can kind of feel some of those milk sugars. It kind of just makes it real smooth. And then, like you, I definitely picked up on the cinnamon notes. But aside from that, what I noticed the most was the thickness. Holy crap. This beer, like, the body of this beer was intense.
It's got motor oil viscosity.
Oh, more than that. Dude, it was so thick, so heavy. Like, I mean, as we were pouring it, I didn't even realize that there were bubbles that were dropping down. And I mean, we almost overfilled the glass because the head was kind of like bubbling over. Like there was so much air in there.
And when you say we, you mean you.
Me. Yeah, it was me that was making that mistake. But I couldn't even see all the bubbles that were being created through the thickness of the body of this beer. But it's not often that we have a beer like this, and it's a lot of fun. It's a delicious one. Perennial Artisan Ales make some really good beers. And so if you ever had the chance to try some Abraxas, we would definitely recommend it.
Yeah, this is the first time it showed up on Atlanta beer shelves, and I was like, gotta pick up a bottle of that for good things. And it was worth it. So
it was very good.
All right, well, that's going to do it for this episode. For listeners who want the show notes for this episode, links to some of the things that we talked about, including that website where you can rent out your baby stuff and maybe make some side cash, we'll put a link to that and more, and that'll be on our website at howtomoney.com.
That's right. And if you have been listening to the show for a while and you found it helpful, we would love for you to leave us a review over at Apple Podcasts. Leave us a solid one over there. And if you have already done that, we would love it if you just simply shared our podcast with a friend or a family member, someone who you know would enjoy hearing us talk on about personal finance and money. Maybe a little bit of craft beer sprinkled in there. Maybe talking about some baby gadgets and gear that we've enjoyed over the years.
Sounds like what we do.
All sorts of stuff, man. But Joel, that's going to be it for this episode, buddy. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.